From the studios of Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Gemma Gaudette. This is Idaho Matters. On Sunday, President Joe Biden announced he would no longer be running for a second term. He then endorsed his vice president, Kamala Harris, as the nominee to run against former President Donald Trump. Harris says she's ready to, quote, earn and win the nomination. And many Democrats have come out to support her. However, the Democratic National Committee chair says the party will go through the process to find a candidate who can defeat President Trump in the election, which is just more than 3 months away. So here today to break down what this means for voters as well as Idaho and the country are Jacqueline Kettler, political scientist at Boise State University, and McKay Cunningham, College of Idaho Director of Graduate Initiatives and Graduate Professor. I want to thank both of you for coming on today and spending time with us.
Thank you.
Happy to be here.
So I want to start with a little bit of historical perspective, if we can. This has actually happened before. The last time it was President Lyndon Johnson back in 1968. Now, the difference is he pulled out of the race several months before Election Day. So, Jacqueline, help us out with looking at Biden stepping down yesterday, just a little more than 3 months away from voting day, because when LBJ did this, it was March and primaries were still going on.
That's correct. This is definitely a new and unique situation. In 1968, when President Lyndon B. Johnson dropped out of the race and didn't seek re-election, as you noted, it was in March. Additionally, he had an active competitor in Eugene McCarthy, who was actually challenging Johnson in primaries like New Hampshire. So when Johnson dropped out, there's already one candidate in the race, and there's time for other candidates to emerge and run in state primaries and caucuses to try to win the party nomination. You know, there were several months there before the DNC met.
So with that said, Jacqueline, can we talk about what happens now? So the Democratic National Convention begins August 19th, less than a month away. The primaries have already happened. So Joe Biden got the nomination through the primaries, but he still officially has to get the nomination at the DNC. So how does this work with delegates? I mean, is it fair to say this won't have an effect on Idaho's delegates, since of course those delegates will go for Trump?
Well, so it is a little complicated. We have the Idaho, you know, voters select, well, let me start again. So the each national party has delegates that officially nominate their presidential nominee. These delegates are selected at state party conventions. Both parties operate a little bit differently. The Democratic Party also has what's known as superdelegates, which are like elected leaders. However, following the 2016 election, superdelegates in the DNC aren't able to vote until the second ballot. So now we'll go to the DNC convention. Delegates will cast votes to officially select the nominee. Generally, those are bound or pledged to the winner of the state primary or caucus. Now that Biden has dropped out, that opens up these delegates to select other candidates. It's expected that many will support Harris, given that the delegates were probably already supportive of Biden. Biden has endorsed Harris. Harris was on the ticket. But there's still some questions in terms of what could happen if another candidate emerges for the Democratic nomination.
So if I'm understanding this correctly, Jacqueline, we really won't know who the nominee is until these delegates are at the Democratic National Convention and they cast that vote. With that said, though, there could be somebody else that puts their hat in the ring.
That is correct. And as we'll probably discuss, there's also some complications in that the DNC is meeting later this year. And so it's actually after filing deadlines to get on the ballot in some states. So the Democrats are already planning to hold a virtual roll call vote in earlier in August to officially select Biden to make sure they successfully got on all the state ballots. So now the DNC's rule committee is going to be meeting on Wednesday to select first, what are they going to do to select a nominee? And are they still going to try to hold a virtual roll call before the DNC actually officially starts meeting on August 19th?
McKay, let me bring you into the conversation here and let's talk about the constitutionality of what's going on. Is there anything in the U.S. Constitution that decides how a party picks a candidate? I mean, is what's happening unconstitutional?
If by your question, when you say if what's happening is it unconstitutional, if you mean Biden's dropping out and the
Correct.
Democratic National Party scrambling to find a replacement, that is definitely not unconstitutional. So maybe if I backed out a little bit and say, what does the Constitution in fact specifically say about the election process? There's nothing specifically in the Constitution to provide for primaries. Or when they are held, or what happens if a nominee drops out. Much more generally, the Constitution in Article 1, Section 4 says that states have the authority over election administration, the times, the places, the manners of holding elections, end quote. And I think therein lies one of the biggest challenges for the Democratic Party because, as Jacqueline was just saying, the DNC is in a little bit of a rough spot here. In the sense that August 19th, less than a month away, is the convention. They don't have a candidate. They don't have time to do many primaries or some other way, but they also don't want to just appoint someone without any kind of a public election system of some sort. So I say all that to say that yes, the Constitution does provide that states, in their own ways, can create laws, time, places, and manners of elections, and each state has. And so the Democratic Party is going to have to navigate each of the 50 states and the District of Columbia when trying to determine how they can make sure that this substitute nominee is on each of those ballots come November.
So, McKay, what about the argument? Could an argument be made that, look, Harris has already been given the go-ahead? And what I mean by that is it was the Biden-Harris ticket. So when you went to the primaries, and if you cast a ballot for Biden, you were casting a ballot for Biden and Harris. Biden happened to drop out. With
Yeah,
that said,
that's one of the
go ahead.
strongest arguments. I apologize. Yeah, that's one of the strongest arguments that the Democrats and the Democrat Party have for Kamala Harris is that exact argument. And I think it's a strong one. We could also couple the fact that Kamala Harris has probably the best funding potential than any other potential Democratic candidate and has at least tacitly been approved by voters in every single Democratic primary across the United States. Those things are really working in Kamala Harris's favor. On the flip side of that, conservatives in the Trump administration are already attacking Kamala Harris in some degree by saying, look, she's going to be undemocratically appointed. Right? Who is this candidate that was never really voted for in the primaries is just handpicked by some party bosses in the Democratic Party. So that is going to be a continual through line from critics with regard to Kamala Harris if she is in fact the one that is on the ballot in November.
If I
So
can add
Jacqueline,
on to
oh, go
that,
ahead. Yes, go ahead.
Additionally, like that, those were some of the concerns in 1968, was that the party bosses behind closed doors selected Humphrey to be the nominee. It led to a very conflictual DNC meeting in Chicago as well, that eventually supported reform, push for reforms that led to how the DNC now selects their candidates. So there is, and in 2016, there were concerns about the DNC orchestrating the selection of Hillary Clinton. So we can see where these concerns among voters might appear, might come out if Harris is just kind of appointed.
So, Jacqueline, can the Democratic Party then make a change this close to Election Day? Or are they constrained by maybe some of these reforms and rules that they made back in 1968?
As McKay said, they're in a really tough spot here because there's just not a lot of time, not just legally, but also in terms of, you know, shifting a campaign, getting all coalescing support around Harris. So they really don't have a lot of time here to try to open things up too much. And as of this morning, a majority of Democratic representatives, senators, and governors have endorsed Harris, suggesting that party elites are really bringing their support behind Harris.
With that said, one of the things I wanted to mention was Act Blue is an online platform for Democratic fundraising. And they just said this morning that small dollar donors, all right, so these are, you know, people who are not big donors. This is not like a war coffer. When Biden stepped down and he endorsed Harris just on Sunday, these small dollar donors contributed $46.7 million by 9 p.m. last night. So you're talking the span of about 9 hours. I am curious what your thoughts would be on when you look at that amount of money being raised in that short of amount of time and this argument about, well, the voters need to be heard. And do we have a mini primary? Is there anything, Jacqueline, that can be taken from the amount of money that was raised by small donors in just that short amount of time?
Yes, I think that demonstrates an enthusiasm among many Democratic voters for Harris. And as McKay mentioned, like, you know, when voters went to these primaries and caucuses, they supported the Biden-Harris ticket. So there are these arguments that many Democratic voters will be very enthusiastic to support Harris and may be less concerned about needing a Harris to go through a full traditional nominating contest. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, with that said, go ahead, McKay.
I'm sorry, Jenny. I think that you made a very strong point with regard to the amount of money that almost immediately flowed into Democratic coffers at the announcement of Biden's departure and Harris's potential replacement there. And one of the things that you consistently heard over the past 2 or 3 months, even longer, was that some independent and Democratic voters were just not all that excited about a candidate whose primary appeal was beating Donald Trump, as opposed to a candidate whose appeal is a lot more energizing for the base. Even if we don't really know precisely what her policy platforms will be, it just seems to reflect the idea that this is a candidate, at least if we can extrapolate from the money that's come in from small donors, that is exciting the base much more than Joe Biden.
Mm-hmm. Before we go to break, McKay, though, if there is not some type of mini primary, which, I mean, I don't know how you do that in that short amount of time, could Republicans honestly come back and say, look, this isn't fair and democratic? Like, you didn't nominate this individual.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think that if I had to predict, we're going to see a lot of fights in the coming couple of months with regard to who can be on the ballot in each state. So you'll have some red states. Well, there will be lawsuits suggesting that Kamala Harris, if she is in fact the nominee identified by the Democratic National Convention, saying, "I'm sorry, we refuse to put this candidate on the ballot." Because of our state law here in whatever state it is. And then that'll be a lawsuit. Whether or not those lawsuits will be effective, it's anybody's guess. But I think we're going to see the opposition, the conservatives, attempt to make claims under state law that a late nomination this late after the primaries runs afoul to their particular state law.
So, McKay, can you talk to us about why we actually have the nominating system in the United States that we do? And we should say how the Electoral College actually factors into this right now.
I'm really glad that you mentioned the Electoral College in that question as well, because we don't definitely want to get into why necessarily we have the Electoral College, but it is one of the reasons that explains the nominating process for primaries and how we vote for the president. I mean, no doubt most of your audience knows that Americans do not directly vote for their president, and we've had five presidents who have not received the majority of votes, the popular vote, and yet who have assumed office anyway. So, getting the popular vote, that's a nice to have, but it's not what determines the presidency. And that's because of the Electoral College, which is memorialized in the 12th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution, ratified in 1804. It's been around for a long time. But when we go to vote for president, we are actually voting for your candidate's preferred electors. And so once you cast your ballot for the president, the vote goes to a statewide tally. And in 48 out of 50 states, it's a winner takes all. So just a really quick example, if we're talking about Ohio and the Republican candidate gets 51% of the vote, the Democratic candidate gets 49% of the vote. All of Ohio's electoral votes, not 51% of them, all of them go towards the presidential election. And Ohio has 17 electoral votes, et cetera. So all of that to say, when we go to vote for a presidential candidate, we're really voting for a candidate's preferred electors. And because we have that electoral college and that electoral system, we've got to decide how it is that we determine who our electors are. And that really plays into the primary system, which I think was the genesis of your question. So each candidate running for president in a particular state has their own group of electors. And for Idaho, for example, when Kamala Harris and Joe Biden were in Idaho, I don't think they were actually, but when they had the primary here and they were chosen by the Democrats to be Idaho's nominee, there's a slate of electors that the Idaho Democratic Party identifies to represent Idaho's vote in the general election.
Okay, so McKay, so the primary happened. The Democrats in Idaho who gave their vote to the Biden-Harris ticket actually gave that vote to these electors who go to the DNC and then do a roll call vote saying yes, Biden-Harris. So now that we're waiting now for the DNC to happen, how come you can't go rogue? How come you can't just as an elect, as one of these electors say, well, I'm gonna, you know what? I'm voting for Harris, or I'm putting my vote to someone else. And with that said, I guess, how does this work now because this candidate backed out?
That's fantastic. Yeah, why not write your own name in, right? There's nothing in the Constitution that requires electors to cast a vote that is reflective of the voters in the state from whence they come. Nothing in the Constitution prohibits that. I believe it has been done historically from time to time. It's fairly rare, and some states, in light of that threat of that happening, have created some criminal and more often civil liability. If you are an elector and you fail to vote in alignment with the voters in your state. So there are some controls. It's on a state by state basis, but there is definitely some question here. And all of it still begs the question that the electors in Idaho, they were chosen to cast a vote for Biden. And Biden's not there. And so again, the DNC is going to have to come up with some sort of a process. And they said that they want to make it transparent and public. That's not a whole set of new primary elections, but is something very quick and very public that would allow, for example, Idaho's delegates, Idaho's electors, to feel comfortable in their new obligation in selecting whoever the new nominee is going to be, whether it's Harris or whomever else that the DNC ultimately identifies.
Jacqueline, I want to talk a little bit about the down ballot impact on this race now. What could we potentially see? Because even if, like, let's say Harris gets the nomination, if she does not win, could there still be this down ballot impact of the Democrats holding on to some type of power? Maybe they take both the House and the Senate, because that has been a major concern. So I want to start there with that down ballot effect, and then let's take it into Idaho.
I think the unpopularity of Biden and the lack of enthusiasm, as McKay mentioned, for Biden, even among Democratic voters, was starting to really worry Democrats about their ability to win down ballot races, including in the House and the Senate. While Democrats in some of these key Senate races were running or have been running ahead of Biden, if Democrats are really unenthusiastic about Biden, if some of them don't turn out to vote, that could really harm their ability to win key races to, I mean, to win a majority in Congress. Additionally, that can affect state and local races. So I think that's one reason why many Democratic officials and elites were pushing Biden to drop out so that they could be more competitive in down ballot races.
So, McKay, I think you said this, and I want to reiterate this. It seems like the DNC is kind of between a rock and a hard place right now, because their candidate, in the primaries, got the go ahead, got the yes, has now dropped out, and so, what do you do from a standpoint of making sure that you go truly go through a democratic process? I mean, can they even consider doing kind of a primary speed dating of candidates? I mean, is that even a possibility?
Yeah, I mean, I would love to be on a fly on the wall in some of these decisions that they're facing right now. I mean, part of the argument is immediately, guys, what we have to do is identify our nominee immediately, because otherwise we're going to face a bunch of lawsuits from a bunch of states for failure to have done so in the timeline that they have in their state. But they can't really do that in the sense that just like you say, Gemma, it really seems like it's an appointment rather than someone who has been vetted by the voters themselves, regardless of the fact that Kamala Harris was on the ticket with Joe Biden winning every state's primary. So yeah, you've got these really difficult places to be in, and I think that they're really going to try to find that silver lining to some degree, where they identify the process that they are going to use, so everyone can see that process. It will be transparent, but in so doing, it's going to engender a lot of criticisms, really, no matter what direction they go in. So yeah, I think they're in a really tough place. One thing that I've found fascinating, and maybe it's only because it's been like a day and a half, but one thing that I've found fascinating is I haven't seen any major Democrat politician saying, I want to run, or throwing his or her name in hat into the race. I see, contrarily, what was surprising to me is already some coalition around, a pretty strong coalition, a lot of people who have given their support, formal endorsement, et cetera, for Kamala Harris. And that might make the DNC's job slightly easier if they don't have three or four really big name Democrats saying, no, I want this nomination. I'm the one that's better, and really fragmenting the party at a time when it's very vulnerable.
So let's go, let's
I
dig into
agree.
that a little bit. Oh, go ahead, Jacqueline.
I was going to say, I agree. I think that is really fascinating because we have seen factions within the Democratic Party complicate matters for the party. But here we really are starting to see this coalescing around Harris. And if anything, some potential threats to her seem to be maybe kind of trying to throw their name out for her VP pick.
Let's dig into that, can we, a little bit? Because who would be the possible candidates aside from Harris? Or, as Jacqueline just mentioned, McKay, are these folks now trying to be that VP nominee? Because, for example, Gretchen Whitmer, the governor of Michigan, her name had been bandied about, if Biden were to step down a couple of weeks ago. She came out yesterday saying, I'm not gonna run, for president. So that's just one example. But who else should we be, looking towards? Whether it is, are they going to try to make a run against Harris, or are they setting themselves up for a potential VP pick?
Yeah, I mean, Governor Gavin Newsom, like you said, Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer, Pennsylvania Governor Josh Shapiro, California Representative Ro Connor, maybe even North Carolina's Governor Ray Cooper. I mean, all I think have very strong credentials. None of them have said that they want the nomination instead of Harris. And in fact, just like you identified, not all, but most of them have come out and clearly said, I endorse Kamala Harris. It may be just a wise political move. I'm looking for the vice president, the VP nomination. But yeah, that's just been one thing that has been surprising to me.
Jacqueline, before we head to break, what about the fact that there are two high-profile Democrats, Nancy Pelosi and Barack Obama, who, at least as of us being live today at 12:34, have not endorsed Harris? Is it because could it be two things? A, they don't think she's a good nominee, or B, is it because they want to make sure this is fair?
I think it's a good question. And I mean, especially Pelosi, I mean, she's a very smart politician. So she may be, it sounds like she had a pretty major role in eventually encouraging Biden to withdraw from the race. So she may be kind of taking a step back to watch. She may be doing some internal things. I haven't seen especially theories yet on what might be happening here, but they I mean, Obama really praised Biden for this decision. So there may also be an attempt to try to let, help Biden cement his legacy before moving on.
So McKay, what about possible lawsuits if Harris is or is not the final candidate? Could questions about the election end up in front of the U.S. Supreme Court?
I don't know about the United States Supreme Court, but I would be really surprised if there were no lawsuits generated by President Biden stepping down and the identification by the party, by the Democratic Party, of another candidate so late in the election cycle. So I think that we will see that. But because the Constitution has no specific statements or requirements that deal with primaries or that deal with the nomination system, et cetera, it won't be lawsuits that are challenged on constitutional grounds, at least likely not. The Constitution again provides specific authority for each state to determine the time, place, and manner of each state's respective elections. And it's those state laws that I think will be at the forefront with regard to any litigation challenge stemming from President Biden's stepping down. And I just don't know what those look like specifically. I can guess that some of them may be around deadlines. So each state has a deadline by which it wants to know the people who will be on that state's ballot. And if the Democratic National Party does not have certainty with regard to who that person is before those deadlines, it's going to be really hard to get that person even on the ballot for people to consider. I think there will probably be some litigation around that. Whether or not it ever gets up to the Supreme Court is a huge question. We know that the court historically has not been shy about stepping into extremely divisive political conflicts. So if I was an official in the Democratic Party, that would be something I would be ultimately concerned about, hoping to avoid lawsuits generally, but getting into the federal system and the Supreme Court more specifically.
Can I run a scenario by both of you? And I was thinking about this as we've been talking. So what if there are certain states that say, you know what, we're not going to allow a change on our ballot. Biden got the nomination, through our primary, and he's staying on the ballot. So let's say that Biden wins, right? Let's just say that, well, you know what? He gets the nomination with the DNC and he wins. I mean, can't he on November 6th then say, I'm not taking it and I'm giving it to my vice president? I mean, I'm just running through so many scenarios in my head of what ifs.
Well, I think one thing to that helps the Democrats out here is that while Biden had won primaries and caucuses, he has not been formally nominated by the DNC. And so as a result, he has not officially been nominee. And the you know, the DNC is short on time. They need to move quickly. But had Biden withdrawn after the DNC nominated him, I think that's when we'd be really likely to be seeing some of these intense legal questions.
So Jacqueline, is that really the critical piece of this then? Is that, and I think why we heard and felt so much pressure from other Democratic leaders for him to step down is this is messy enough. It would have been even messier if he had stepped down after getting the formal nomination.
For sure. It would be, I mean, so much more complicated. And then you really get into legal concerns, but also election integrity concerns. I mean, we'll have to see what the DNC ends up deciding to do, how they decide to nominate their nominee. But at least they had not officially nominated Biden yet.
So I want to talk a little bit about how this changes the campaign as a whole. And Jacqueline, can we start with the Republicans and former President Trump? Because, you know, I think in fairness, this has shaken them up as well, because so much of what Trump has been talking about is what a bad president Biden has been, and all of, you know, his real or unreal, you know, faults and what he has and has not done. But his entire campaign has been about beating Biden. And the Republicans as a party have really been pushing this and talking about, in particular, Biden's age and that he's not fit to serve, et cetera, et cetera. So how does this now really impact them moving forward?
It's going to have a major impact. They probably have to change all of their messaging. They may have ads ready to go attacking Biden that now need to be changed. I mean, when running against and attacking Biden for his age, well, now Harris doesn't have the same issues. As vice president, Harris could also potentially distance herself from some unpopular Biden administration policies and try to take credit for those that are popular. Now, that's kind of a tricky line to walk, but there again, it makes it a little bit harder for Republicans. So they also have been thrown probably into some chaos and kind of stolen their thunder of just having their national convention and Trump selecting J.D. Vance as his VP nominee.
And what about the Democrats? How do they now retool campaign strategy and messaging?
Well, yeah, I mean, now you've got, I mean, a completely different candidate. Though I suspect that their main points about attacking Trump and promoting the policy successes of the Biden administration will continue to be two key things, but they also need to help increase Harris's name recognition and convince voters that she is qualified to be president.
Mm-hmm. Before I let both of you go, I am curious about what both of you think about how big of a challenge this is now for the DNC to get this figured out and get this figured out quickly, whether that virtual roll call happens August 7th or we see something happen August 19th. And McKay, I'll start with you.
Yeah, I mean, I think that as we've talked about a lot, this is it's a massive challenge for the DNC. I think that it is strangely made a little easier, a little more streamlined in the sense that I think that the Democratic Party has couched this presidential vote as one in which democracy is at stake itself, and in which just the basic functioning of our democratic institutions and of the Constitution is at stake. And as a result, I think that may have been why so many big fans and party affiliates of Joe Biden had to do what they thought was probably the right thing and encourage him to drop out. So even though the lift is very heavy, even though the time frame is very compressed in which the DNC needs to identify a nominee that both seems like that the American public has vetted and want this candidate without having any primaries, and do it such a short time, I think that a lot of folks are motivated to get it done and to help rather than to pull apart, because of the inherent conflict represented by the opponent, Donald Trump, and the attending threats to democracy.
Jacqueline, your final thoughts.
Yeah, I agree with what McKay has said. You know, the DNC, we're all going to be watching what decisions the DNC and the Rules Committee makes, because it is going to be a difficult decision. And the DNC often has faced criticism from Democratic voters. So there is pressure on them, but it does seem like we're seeing a lot of Democrats, whether elites or voters, already putting their support behind Harris, which, as McKay said, may make things a little easier.
Well, I want to thank both of you for your analysis on this. I really appreciate you spending the time with us today. We've been speaking with Jacqueline Kettler, political scientist at Boise State University, and McKay Cunningham, College of Idaho, director of graduate initiatives and graduate professor. Thank you both so much. We're lucky enough to have Representative Lauren Nekicheya. She is the chair of the Idaho Democratic Party, joining us now to talk more. Lauren, thank you so much for your time today.
Happy to be here. Thanks.
Representative Nekicheya, I am curious, what was your first reaction when you heard the news Sunday that President Biden was stepping out of the race?
Was sweet, I think, you know, to see someone with a decades-long career in public service step aside, especially after his accomplishments that will benefit Americans for generations to come. You know, he came into office at a difficult time. Our economy was on the brink. We were in the throes of a pandemic, and he brought us back. We now have scores of new jobs, higher wages, and the revitalization of American manufacturing. And he's, you know, has many legislative accomplishments as well, the Inflation Reduction Act, the Once in a Generation Infrastructure Plan, and just so many things. And so it's bittersweet to see him step aside. And it's also inspiring because he's doing it for the country. He's doing it so that we can have the best chance possible to win in November.
I know this is early to be asking this, but what do we know in terms of what happens now with the nominating process here in Idaho, or are you still figuring that out?
Well, we're still seeing exactly what the path will look like. We do know that the delegates that are pledged to Biden are up for grabs now. So Biden endorsed Kamala Harris, his vice president, but it's those pledged delegates who will actually decide and make that decision. And what we're seeing is massive support for the vice president and zero other candidates on the horizon. So Democratic members of Congress, governors, mayors, they're all throwing their support behind the vice president. And so it's easy to see a scenario where she is the candidate.
You know, so many Democrats are rallying around Vice President Harris as the possible presidential candidate. We've seen a lot of endorsements come out in the last 24 hours. You mentioned President Biden endorsed her right away. With that said, I think it's fair to point out that she struggled when she ran in 2020 for president. She bowed out before any primaries. She just did not do well. With that said, is she ready for this job now, and what has changed between 2020 and today?
Vice President Harris is only more experienced now than she was 4 years ago. She has almost 4 years of serving as vice president under her belt, on top of being a former U.S. senator, an attorney general, and a prosecutor. She has dedicated her life to public service, unlike the candidates on the other side of the aisle. And she's, you know, ready to hit the ground running, you know, with all of the historic consequential accomplishments that the Biden-Harris administration has achieved. She has been right there along with it. And of course, it's hard to come to the top and win a presidential nomination. Only one person gets to do that. And we have many skilled, qualified people who throw their hat in the ring for president and don't rise to the top the first time. But you can see in that enthusiasm, the record-breaking grassroots fundraising we saw yesterday just means that the party is around her, but also regular citizens who are chipping in, you know, the few dollars they can spare, makes it clear how much enthusiasm there is. So, you know, the Republicans have a few billionaires bankrolling their candidate, and they'll do as much damage as they can to us with those dollars. But I'd much rather have the vast grassroots enthusiasm we're seeing surge on the Democratic side.
I hate even asking this question, but I'm asking it because I have had people reach out to me in the last 24 hours asking this. And that is, if Vice President Harris is the candidate, is the country ready for a female president? We certainly weren't back in 2016. And now it is a female, potential female president of color. And let's be honest, our country, when it comes to putting women in power, we have a real issue with that.
It's not, you know, there will be attacks on Vice President Harris that will happen precisely because she is a woman, and that's not fair. But every major advance in our history, from ending slavery to winning the, you know, women's right to vote to protecting civil rights, all of those things came at a time when not everyone was ready. And pushing forward is how we make progress. It's how we elected our first Black president, who we then reelected. And it's how we will elect our first woman president. And while Hillary Clinton did not succeed in winning the Electoral College, she did win the popular vote. So a majority of Americans have already embraced the idea of a woman president. I think the more pressing question is if this country is willing to accept as president a felon on 34 counts who was also found guilty of rape by a jury and who incited a violent insurrection to overturn an election.
How do you think this could impact the Democratic Party, in particular in Idaho, getting a younger candidate on the ballot? And as we talked about earlier in the show that you mentioned, this $46.7 million being raised by small donors in basically a 9-hour period yesterday, do you potentially see kind of a down ballot impact in Idaho?
Absolutely. And we have so many races in Idaho that are won or lost by 100 votes or a few dozen votes or sometimes just a couple votes. And now we have Trump, the oldest person ever to receive a presidential nomination, on the top of the Republican ticket. And we're likely going to have a younger candidate on top of the Democratic ticket who's going to generate more enthusiasm and interest among younger voters who haven't participated before. And the historic opportunity to elect the first woman president is also going to generate that interest. And as voters get more engaged and they're going to learn about the harms of Project 2025 and the Republican agenda to pass a national abortion ban, to repeal the Affordable Care Act that gives so many Americans health insurance and attack Social Security and Medicare, those voters are going to want to vote for Democrats. And in Idaho this year, they're lucky because they will have a Democrat on the ballot for the Idaho legislature and every single legislative district. And that is why we're seeing this enthusiasm, is why we're seeing the MAGA Republicans panicking. You know, their candidate was found guilty of these felonies, and he's refusing to drop out. And then he picked one of the most extreme and inexperienced people he could have picked for his vice presidential candidate. And so Republicans are stuck with them while Democrats we're pivoting. And I think we're going to come out of this united and enthusiastically supporting Vice President Kamala Harris.
Well, I want to thank you so much for your perspective on this. I appreciate all of the analysis today. We've been talking with Representative Lauren Necochea. She is the chair of the Idaho Democratic Party, talking about President Joe Biden stepping out of the presidential race and what that may or may not look like moving forward to November. Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you tomorrow.
Here at Shortwave Space Camp, we escape our everyday lives to explore the mysteries and quirks of the universe. We find weird, fun, interesting stories that explain how the cosmos is partying all around us. From stars to dwarf planets to black holes and beyond, we've got you. Listen now to the Shortwave podcast from NPR.